हरि बोल, हरिर्नाम हरिर्नाम हरिर्नामैव केवलम् कलौ नास्तेव 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 गतिरन्यथा. सो हरि बोल इज दैट हरिर्नाम. द एज ऑफ कली इज अ वेरी डिग्रेडेड एज. It's the age of sinful activities, dosher nidhe, the crest jewel of sinful activities, of sinful situation. But this age has one great advantage. Astihi eka mahan guna. Kalir doshe nidhe rajan. Astihi eka mahan guna. Kirtana deva krishnasya. Mukta sanga param brajet. The great advantage is, although this age is a very, very sinful and degraded age, but this age has a great advantage. Asti hi eka mahan guna. And that is kirtanadeva krishnasya. Just by chanting the holy name of Krishna, mukta sanga param brajet, one can become free from all the bondages, all the degraded condition of this age, and go back to the spiritual sky. So this is the unique situation of the age of Kali. In one hand, it's a very degraded age. In one hand, it's a very difficult period. It's an age when suffering will be extremely acute. But it has a great advantage. Just very easily one can go back to the spiritual sky. Not only going back to the spiritual sky, reaching the highest region of the spiritual sky. That is the advantage of this age, which was not available in other ages. Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapar Yuga. In those ages, on one hand, the process was very difficult. Actually, the more degraded people become, the process for spiritual perfection becomes easier. In Satya Yuga, the process was most difficult. In Treta Yuga, it became little less difficult. And in Dwapar Yuga, it became even more, even less difficult. But in Kali Yuga, it has become absolutely easy. Why? Because the more competent the individual is, the test is more difficult. When you were in junior school, when you were in kindergarten, what was the exams like? Very easy. It may be easy for you, but not for those kids who are in the kindergarten or who are in the pre-primary school. And then in primary school, the test become little more difficult. In high school, it becomes more difficult. In college, it becomes even more difficult. And in the university, it is very, very difficult. Now, you can see that as they become more conversant with the subject, as they become more competent, the tests become difficult. Test is according to one's degree of advancement. For him, it is not that difficult. For a high school student, the university exams may appear to be extremely difficult, but the university students, for them it's not that difficult, provided they are prepared properly. And they are prepared according to, the exams are according to their preparation, according to their level of advancement. Similarly, in Satya Yuga, when people are extremely competent, the process for spiritual advancement or spiritual perfection was very difficult. That's the most difficult. This dhyana or Ashtanga Yoga process is extremely difficult process. But Satya Yuga people are so pure that for them it was not difficult. For them to withdraw their senses and focus their consciousness into their heart and see the super soul and achieve the perfection of by achieving Yoga Samadhi was not difficult. But in Treta Yuga they became less qualified. Therefore, the process also became easier. They are not able to, most of the people will not be able to meditate and see the super soul in the heart, see the Lord in the heart. They lost that ability. Therefore, the easier process has been given, sacrifice. It is relatively easier, but it is not an easy process. Sacrifice means sacrifice. Sacrifice everything. Offer everything to the Lord. Offer everything for the pleasure of the Lord. And ultimately offer yourself to the Lord. But then in Dwapar Yuga, people became even more unqualified. So the process became even more simple. Okay, you can't sacrifice everything for the sake of the Lord's pleasure. Okay, worship the Lord in the temple. Worship the deity. Quite a simple process, but not really that simple. To worship the Lord in the temple, following the rules and regulations of the scriptures, is extremely difficult. Get up so early in the morning, take a cold shower, and chant so many mantras. Like in South India, we see the semblance of deity worship still today. In ISKCON, deity worship is very simple. Prabhupada simplified it, but that is not the process of deity worship to achieve the spiritual perfection. So many times the offerings has to be made and one has to maintain so much purity and relationship with the Lord. So in Kali Yuga people lost that ability also. Now in Kali Yuga people are not even able to worship the Lord in the temple. What to speak of worship the Lord in the temple? They don't even want to go to the temple. And it is only by Prabhupada's mercy and ISKCON's influence that is creating the good fortune for us, where we are developing some relationship with the deity, recognizing that he is Krishna himself standing in front of us, and we have given the opportunity to serve him directly. That wonderful good fortune can be perceived and understood only by Srila Prabhupada's mercy. But otherwise, most of the people in the age of Kali don't even want to have anything to do with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although they may not have become absolutely atheistic, but still they don't really want to do and have anything to do with the Lord, although the Lord is present in the form of the deity. Now mind you, in Satyayuga the deities were not there. You remember the incidents of King Indradumna? Indradumna wanted to see the Lord. And there was no way he could see the Lord. The only way he could see the Lord is go to the forest, meditate for a few thousand years, perform Ashtanga Yoga, and then see the Lord in the heart. That was not possible for him, but he was dying to see the Lord. Which actually meant that he was prepared to give up everything and go to the forest, but the ministers held him back. No, no, please don't go. We'll try to find some ways. And then one Brahmin came to the court and announced, "The Lord is present in Niladri Mountain on the bank of the saltwater ocean." So, the moment he heard that, he became excited. Oh, the Lord is present. That means Lord's deity is present. Mind you, that means in Satyayuga there was only one deity present. And now you go to Lai Bazaar, there are hundreds and thousands of deities being sold that anybody can afford to buy. Don't have to go to even Lai Bazaar. Even in Bombay, in the marketplace, you can find the deities are being sold. In Kali Yuga, the deities have become so readily available. They are present. They are there. And now it's just a matter of accepting them, installing them, and worshipping them. But that was not the case in Satya Yuga. There was only one deity of the Lord. The deity of Nila Madhav. So although everything has become so easy in the age of Kali, still people do not want to take advantage of that. They are not going to worship deities. Although the Lord has made this opportunity available practically to anyone and everyone in this age. Therefore, the Lord has, seeing that people are not going to worship the deities even, the Lord has manifested Himself in the form of the holy name. And anybody can chant. It doesn't need any special arrangement. We don't have to install the deities and spend so much time every day. In Kali Yuga it's not possible. In the big cities we see practically everyone has to work. And that means good 14, 15 hours a day are gone. Out of 24 hours, good 12 to 14 hours are gone just attending the office or factory. And commute to the place of work. So much time is gone. So where is the time for deity worship? And where is the mentality? Although deity worship is difficult, but chanting the holy name of the Lord is not difficult. Khaite shuite jatha tatha nam loy. One can chant while eating prasad. One can chant while even lying on bed. One can chant while traveling to office. One can chant even when he's working in the office. So that is how easy it has become. Anybody, anywhere, under any circumstances, can chant the holy name of the Lord. Smaranena kala. There is no consideration of time, place, qualification and circumstances in chanting the holy name. Anywhere one can chant the holy name. Under any condition one can chant the holy name. In this respect, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu set a very beautiful example. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, one day he came out of the toilet and he was biting onto his tongue. And everybody became surprised. They asked, why are you biting onto your tongue like this? And Mahaprabhu said, look, I was in a dirty place and my tongue is so uncontrolled that he was chanting the holy name there also. Therefore I am biting onto the tongue in order to stop it from chanting the holy name of the Lord. There was a 5-year-old boy. His name was Gopal. So Gopal asked, if the time comes for one to leave his body in a dirty place, should he chant the holy name or not? Mahaprabhu accepted. That's true. Gopal taught me some lesson today. That the holy name should be chanted anywhere. Whether dirty or clean, irrespective of dirty and clean, it should be, holy name should be chanted everywhere. As Gopal pointed out, that if the time comes to leave the body in a dirty place, should we chant the holy name? And in this way, through Gopal, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu established a very, very important principle about the chanting of the holy name. Anywhere and everywhere, the holy name should be chanted. And that's why Mahaprabhu accepted Gopal's instruction. And Gopal, as if Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted Gopal as his guru. And from that time, Gopal's name became Gopal Guru. Gopal, the spiritual master. 5-year-old boy, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted him as his guru. And he later became known as Sri Gopal Guru Goswami. And so the point is that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in this way made this point clear, made it clear that the holy name must be chanted irrespective of the condition of the place, irrespective of any consideration for time. Sometimes the smarters, they say, oh, unless we take bath, we cannot chant. Then again, the same point will apply. Well, at the time of death, if you haven't taken your bath, will you chant the holy name or not? Doesn't matter, wherever we are, and in whichever condition we are in, we must chant the holy name. Sarbokkhon boloithe bidhi nahi ar. Sarbokkhon boloithe. Chant this name all the time. Not only silently. Japa is generally done silently. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used the expression bolo. Bolo, in Hindi it will be bolna. So bolna or jap karna, ye dono mein kuch antar hai. Jap is silent. But bolna means loudly. So loudly, louder the better. That point also has been made by Haridas Thakur. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is asking Haridas Thakur some questions and Haridas Thakur is answering those questions. And Mahaprabhu, through Haridas Thakur, is making these points, like Haridas Thakur is, Mahaprabhu is asking and Haridas Thakur is replying. Then Haridas Thakur is saying that louder is the better. Why? Because when you chant silently, then only the chanter gets the benefit. others don't get any benefit. But when you chant loudly, whoever hears it gets the benefit. And the louder it is, better it is. Because further it will go. Then at one point Mahaprabhu questioned, what about the trees and plants? Like, they cannot chant, so how will they benefit? They cannot hear, how will they benefit? Haridas Thakur said, no, the holy name is so powerful that it affects anyone, even the trees and plants. And what we consider to be the echo, that is actually the chanting of the trees and plants. We are loudly chanting and the sound is reverberated in the form of echo. So this echo is actually what we are hearing, the trees and plants chanting of the holy name. So this is how even the trees and plants are deriving the spiritual benefit. So this is how Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu created an inconceivable good fortune for the people of this world in this age. Now, the Lord's mercy is undoubtedly inconceivable, but even greater is His devotees' mercy. Like we can see, Krishna is merciful, no doubt about it. But when Krishna comes in the mood of Srimati Radharani, He is even more merciful. Krishna came in Dwapar Yug, but He didn't give this kind of benediction to the living entities of that age. But when He came in the age of Kali, in the mood of Srimati, assuming the mood and complexion of Srimati Radharani, then He became even more magnanimous. Krishna is not so magnanimous. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is even more magnanimous. Why? Because He came with the mood of Srimati Radharani. But even more magnanimous is His devotees. Like Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came, distributed Krishna consciousness 500 years ago, only in India. Yes, He inundated India with Krishna consciousness by His mercy. But He made an amazing prediction at that time that Krishna consciousness movement will spread all over the world, in every town and village. He came and gave Krishna consciousness, and that's why he has been recognized, He has been glorified as the Mahavadanya, the most munificent personality of Godhead. In no other incarnation, in no other appearance, the Lord displays this kind of mercy, as He did as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But Mahaprabhu makes a prediction that this movement, this Krishna consciousness movement, will spread all over the world. Prithivite ache jato nagoradi gram sarvatra prachar hoibe mor nam. As many towns and villages are there on this planet, everywhere this holy name will spread. So it's an inconceivable prediction. In every town and village, a prediction that Mahaprabhu Himself did not fulfill, a prediction that is far supersedes His achievement, every town and village all over the world. But He predicted, so it's going to happen. And then we saw that it is happening. Now the personality who made it happen, who is He? He must be one of the most intimate associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu, He is so dear to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that he wanted to give him the credit of spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world. And that is Srila Prabhupada. And it is because of Srila Prabhupada's mercy that we all are here. Srila Prabhupada came and he went to America. And in 10 years' time, he spread this movement all over the world. And then he brought those Americans to India. And he started to spread this name through them, spread this movement through them. And that's why most of us are here, actually. If the Americans did not take to Krishna consciousness, probably many of us wouldn't have accepted Krishna consciousness. Just as you saw, when Srila Prabhupada was here, he was trying to preach all over. He made so many different endeavors to spread Krishna consciousness. But what was the response? Only one person who became his devotee didn't even want to follow him and assist him. And that was the extent of Srila Prabhupada's. That was the response that Srila Prabhupada got in preaching in India. But then Prabhupada brought his dancing white elephants to India. And then they begin to recognize, if the Americans accepted it, it must be something very wonderful. But then again, it was at the beginning, there was a lot of resistance. I don't know whether you all know or whether you all are aware of it. In the early days, many people were not really impressed that the Americans accepted Krishna consciousness. Americans and Europeans accepted Krishna consciousness. Rather, they began to suspect that there must be something wrong. These people must be CIAs. Because otherwise, why they would take to Krishna this strange way of life, which we don't even want to accept? Why the Americans would accept it? When our dream is to become like Americans, why should the Americans will start behaving the way that we don't even want to behave like? Especially in places like Bengal, where the communist influence was very prominent at that time. In the early days, they were very, very antagonistic to Krishna consciousness movement. But unfortunately, times are changing and people began to recognize the importance of this movement. And this is Prabhupada's wonderful arrangement, Krishna's wonderful arrangement. That Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had his amazing plan. Chaitanya, after all, he is a supreme proprietor, supreme controller, supreme personality of Godhead. He is omniscient, he knows everything. So his plans are perfect. So while Prabhupada was not successful in India, Prabhupada was sent to America by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's arrangement. And not only Prabhupada was sent, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made another very wonderful arrangement. He planted his agents in America to assist Srila Prabhupada. So as soon as Srila Prabhupada went there, all these devotees just came forward. So it's not an accidental happening. So these are actually devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu who had been placed there in order to assist Srila Prabhupada when he went there. In this respect, we can recall one incident. Once a devotee was lamenting, in a very, very humble state of mind. He was saying, Prabhupada, I was so fallen. I was so degraded. And you saved me. My Prabhupada said, no, that was all superficial. Your degraded condition was all superficial. Because as soon as I called, you came. As soon as Srila Prabhupada went, they just came. Even though some of them may have been somewhat sinful in their activities, they gave up all those sinful activities and accepted Krishna consciousness. This very strict and pure standard that Srila Prabhupada established. It's amazing. Those young boys and girls in America, the way they took to Krishna consciousness following these four regulative principles so strictly. No meat eating. It's unheard of in America. Vegetarianism. Those days was, nowadays of course, it's becoming popular, vegetarianism, due to again Srila Prabhupada's mercy. But those days vegetarianism was unheard of. No intoxication. Couldn't even think of it. And not even what kind of, no intoxication. No tea, coffee. Like not just alcohol and LSD and heroin and cocaine. No tea, coffee. And that is in the heart of America. Whereas in India, the sadhus, they just drink tea and coffee as if there is nothing wrong. What's wrong with tea? Chai mein kya hai? Chai peene se kya har jaye hai? Chai kaise nasha hai? Even sadhus think that way. Why tea is intoxicant? But that's the standard that Srila Prabhupada established. No tea, no coffee. And no illicit sex. No gambling. What a lofty standard. But Srila Prabhupada didn't make any compromise. Once Prabhupada mentioned that if instead of four regulative principles, I compromised one and made it three, then I would have had thousands of followers. But Prabhupada would not compromise. His point was that I am not interested in number. I am not interested in quantity. I want the quality. You go to a plastic shop, you'll find many, many customers, but they're all cheapskates. But go to a diamond shop, very few, but they're solid. So Prabhupada was going for the customers for diamonds, not plastic shop customers. So the number may not have been many, but the quality was extremely lofty. So this is how Srila Prabhupada started to spread. And the kind of response Srila Prabhupada got at that time, history will record that there must have been some amazing, it must have been one of the most amazing phenomena in this world. Like so many young boys and girls gave up their sinful life and came to Prabhupada in order to accept a life which is even difficult for the saintly personalities in India. In the West there had been few vegetarians, but they never thought of becoming teetotalers. Some vegetarians were there, very rare, like George Bernard Shaw was a vegetarian, Tolstoy was a vegetarian. But Prabhupada made hundreds and thousands of individuals, and that are also young ones, follow these four regulative principles. So this way we can see what an amazing commitment they had to make in order to take part with Srila Prabhupada in his movement. And then Srila Prabhupada sent them to different corners of the world and they spread Krishna consciousness. So history will recognize or record this amazing happening in this planet during this time. How Prabhupada came and spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. And it is because of his causeless mercy that we all are here today. And we are getting the benefit of making spiritual progress. And if we stay on this path, it's guaranteed that, yes, we'll make it back to Godhead. Guaranteed. Prabhupada gave that assurance. You follow the process I have given and guaranteed you will go back to Godhead. Once Prabhupada said, in ISKCON, everyone is a pure devotee. And some devotees are shocked. Everyone in ISKCON, a pure devotee. Even I am a pure devotee. Those new bhaktas, those who joined day before yesterday, they are pure devotees. Prabhupada said, yes. They all are pure devotees. It's only a matter of green mango and ripe mango. The mango may be green today, but if it stays on in the tree, then it'll become ripe. So you stay in ISKCON, you'll become a pure devotee. So ISKCON is the factory for manufacturing pure devotees. All we have to do is just stay on in ISKCON. We can try it at least with one lifetime. That's what Prabhupada told me. Just offer this life to Krishna. Just offer this life to Krishna. You tried so many lifetimes to enjoy, and you can see you're still not satisfied. So just offer this life to Krishna. And then Prabhupada said, even if it doesn't succeed, what's the loss? It's just one lifetime out of so many. But the point that Prabhupada was making, offer this life to Krishna and you will achieve your perfection, spiritual perfection. So that is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy that Srila Prabhupada came to distribute. Just join ISKCON, stay in ISKCON, practice the process Srila Prabhupada gave. Even though you may fail, even though you may falter, doesn't matter. Don't give up if you stumble. Stay on in this path. And at the end, Prabhupada will deliver you. And we are seeing that is happening, how devotees are making it at the end of their life. So many devotees that we can think of are God brothers who left ISKCON, fell down miserably, but then somehow at some point just before dying they came back to ISKCON. And the way they left their bodies gives a clear indication that they made it. They made it. Chanting the holy name, surrounded by the devotees chanting the holy name, Prabhupada's bhajan playing in tape recorder. They left their bodies. Where did they go? When one leaves his body in this situation, where does he go? Another incident I remember where A devotee didn't even have the good fortune of coming back to the association of devotees. He was leaving his body, the doctors were attending him, then all of a sudden he sat up. And sat up means he kind of lifted his head up and said, Prabhupada, you came. And he fell back, left his body. The doctors didn't know who was Prabhupada, but they related to his wife, his girlfriend actually. That, and the girlfriend also didn't know who is Prabhupada. So one day she met some devotees, and she knew that her boyfriend was a ISKCON devotee at one time. So she asked who Prabhupada was. And they told who Prabhupada was. And then she narrated this incident, what actually happened. How her boyfriend left his body. Now from that you can make out, although he was not in the association of devotees, although he himself has deviated so unfortunately, so far away. But when the time came, because he rendered a lot of service, he was a sannyasi at one time, during Prabhupada's time. Prabhupada gave him sannyasi, he was a sannyasi. But unfortunately he deviated. But still Prabhupada came. Prabhupada, you came. So Prabhupada came to take him back. Now at that time, when you see Prabhupada, what will be your consciousness? Will death be difficult at that time? Rather, through death we will achieve the ultimate perfection of our life. Will death be painful? No, death will be ecstatic. Srila Prabhupada, you came. And Prabhupada will say, okay, come. Wasted a lot of your time, now come back. So, in this way, Srila Prabhupada is going to take care of those who sincerely surrender themselves unto his lotus feet. And our only concern is to remain in ISKCON, in the association of devotees. Some devotees may have been very fortunate, although they have deviated, still Prabhupada came to deliver them. But let's not take that risk. What's the guarantee? So let's stay in ISKCON. And we know one thing, that if we can stay in ISKCON at least this lifetime, then at the end, if we can give up at the end, I mean, if we can die in ISKCON, we'll make it. Because so many devotees will be there, chanting the holy name, reminding us about the importance of the holy name. They'll make all kinds of wonderful arrangements for us. And if in that atmosphere, if we can leave our body, yes, our life will be successful. We don't have to go very far. I was just thinking of one devotee who was very close to us here, is Shamsundari. The way she was from Pune, the way she left her body, just a young girl. She became seriously ill at one point, taken to the hospital in the intensive care. All kinds of needles and pipes and tubes were inserted in her body and mouth. She regains her consciousness and asks the doctor to take all this away. And there, surrounded by devotees chanting the holy name, she left her body. Where did she go? obviously, she made it. So this is the good fortune that Srila Prabhupada has created for us. And Srila Prabhupada's very wonderful associate, disciple, His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj is guiding you all so wonderfully under His very able and wonderful guidance. You are getting such a wonderful opportunity to make your spiritual advancement. And we can see how wonderfully you are making advancement. So, this is a good fortune. Now let's take full advantage of this good fortune. Srila Prabhupada ki. His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj ki. Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. Hare Krishna. Does anybody have any question or comment? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Thank you very much for a very nice class. Maharaj, you are speaking about the chanting of the holy name, that will be the only thing that is going to help us in this Kali Yuga. And somehow or other, a devotee should be getting attached to the holy name. Somehow, at any circumstance, he should not forget the holy name. But I used to feel this problem. Is that we know that chanting is the only shelter we have. And finally, whenever the difficulties or tragedies that happens in our life, we try to take the shelter of the holy name. And we hang on with the holy name. And we know it that finally this is the only rescue point which we'll have it. But sometimes the Maya attacks us in such a way that although we are chanting the holy name, although we are taking shelter of the holy name, yet sometimes our anarthas overcome us. At that time, we feel it that the only rescue point which I had is the chanting of the holy name. And that also is not helping me right now. In that circumstances, when this thing happens in our life, what a devotee should do to see to it that again he comes back on the track, because what happens is at that time his enthusiasm for devotional life becomes very subdued. He feels that I don't have anything and my anarthas are keeping me so much on guard that I think I might not make it up or might have to go away from devotional life because my anarthas are much more powerful and the holy name is not able to protect me at this moment of time. What a devotee should do at that moment.
Yeah. So when one sees his anarthas in this way, that is a clear indication that he made a lot of advancement. Because, you see, the spiritual progress acts in this way. The spiritual life is like that. When one is a neophyte devotee, when one is in a neophyte stage, he thinks that he is the only devotee and no one else is a devotee. Then when he is in the Madhyamadhika platform, second class devotee, then he sees, recognizes other devotees, recognizes the innocent and recognizes the offenders and he acts in that way. And at an in the Uttamadhika stage, in the first class, most advanced devotional stage, one feels that everybody else is a devotee, only he couldn't become a devotee. So the process actually reverses. That's why I mentioned that when a devotee, you see, at a neophyte stage, one will not recognize the anarthas. He will think, I am the greatest devotee, my chanting is the purest chanting, and so forth. But when he begins to recognize the anarthas, that is a in an advanced stage already. And now, yes, holy name is the only shelter, but still our attachment to the holy name, our chanting of the holy name often is not pure. Because that is again a natural stage. Because, you see, we are in the material nature. In the remaining on the material nature, we are trying to achieve the spiritual platform. Therefore, it's like a tug of war. Sometimes this side is pulling, and sometimes the other side is pulling. Sometimes Maya is pulling, sometimes Krishna consciousness is pulling us. So it is like ups and downs. Sometimes fixed up, sometimes unsteady. So that will happen. Now, as you asked, like, what is the means of defending ourselves or protecting ourselves and remain fixed up? In that respect, the answer will be association of devotees. Because association of the devotees will provide the necessary inspiration, necessary guidance, and necessary enthusiasm. When we are in the association of good devotees, fixed up devotees, yes, my mind may be fickle. But when I see how seriously they are chanting, how seriously they are conducting, then by seeing them, we get to understand how we should also act, how we should also behave. So, another point is, yes, Maya is very strong. Maya is naturally very strong because Maya is Daibi Hesha Gunamai Mama Maya Duraktaya. Is Daibi. Maya is divine. It's Krishna's energy. Krishna's Maya. Mama Maya. It's my Maya. My energy. So naturally it's going to be very, very powerful. Krishna's energy. And therefore it is Duraktaya. Insurmountable. But association of devotees is so powerful that Maya's influence cannot work there. Why? Because Maya is Krishna's energy, but she is Krishna's external energy. Whereas the association of devotees is Krishna's internal energy. So internal potency is stronger than the external potency. Therefore, the best course of action to prevent or to defend ourselves, save ourselves from the onslaught of Maya, is to remain in the association of devotees. And the proof is, a very, very powerful, serious, fixed up devotee, when he leaves the association of devotees, we see gradually he drifts away, loses his Krishna consciousness. Whereas quite a weak devotee who is in the association of devotees continues to render his service without any difficulties year after year. So this is the power of the association of devotees. Therefore we should just remain in the association of devotees and practice the process that Srila Prabhupada gave. That's why the association is so important, and that's why Srila Prabhupada gave so much emphasis on the institution of ISKCON. Because ISKCON is providing us that association. So if we remain in ISKCON, if we remain in the association of devotees, our spiritual life will be safe. And it's a matter of time. We may not be able to chant purely now, but if we remain in the association of devotees, if we remain in ISKCON, practice the process, maybe someday it will happen. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Any other question? Yes?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for your kind lecture. When I come to temple and here I get a good atmosphere in chanting and there is no problem, and in kirtan and there is no problem. When I go to home and there I chant, then they don't give any response. That today they criticize, and if I chant in the outside, the people they think something crazy and they don't respond. Is that means any offense to mantra, and how to overcome? Suppose someone goes in the office and there he chants. Some comments are given, reverse comments are given. So how to overcome, and is that causing any offense to the mantra?
Well, it's not a matter of causing offense to the mantra. What actually is a cause of concern is how this is going to affect your faith in the holy name. Right? When, say, your family members are discouraging you, when others around you are discouraging you, whether you're going to become discouraged by that. So that is what you have to be careful about, that your faith in the holy name doesn't get affected. Right? And if it is going to affect, then avoid those situations. Don't chant in front of your family members who are not that favorable and going to respond in an unfavorable way. In the office, there is no need to chant in front of others. You can preach to others. But if you chant, then, and if they start criticizing, and probably it will affect your faith and it will affect your psychology also. Maybe somebody will start thinking that you have become crazy when they're calling you crazy. And so chant at home, and in the office preach to them. Preach to them. Like, make them understand, yes, Krishna is God, and taking shelter of Krishna is the ultimate goal of life. When you are chanting, if they are criticizing, then explain to them why you are chanting and what's the benefit you derived from chanting. So, our sadhana should be conducted in a systematic and appropriate way. And when we are meeting people outside, we should make it a point that we must give them Krishna consciousness, at least to those who are going to be favorable to our presentation. Okay. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Gaur Premanande. So we can have a little kirtan now?